Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to IWDM Radio. The program you are about to hear is a community service program on IWDM Radio. Please note, this content is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, legal, professional, or financial counsel or advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts, guests, or agents with IWDM or Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio is not endorsed, sponsored, or certified by any third-party agency. Thank you for listening.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. This is Imam Nazim Pasha, and you're listening to El Islam-based conversations. We're going to get started right away and get you introduced to what we want to talk about today, but we want to actually mention that we hope that we can fulfill our promise to you, which is to not to insult your intelligence or waste your time. When you hear that statement, it really identifies, how can I say, the spirit that we take or we have to when we approach this. It's very serious. We're very committed. We want to hopefully convey some things to you that will cause you to come away thinking about what was said and thinking about it in a way that will affect your thinking. You know, that's what we really want to do, not tell you or influence what to think, to make sure that we are thinking. Because whenever the behavior that we demonstrate is not, let's say, natural or the norm, that's one of the biggest questions and the first question is asked, what were they thinking? And if you think about it, you know, you might try to use our little tactics to identify, you know, well, I don't know, and we will probably come away with two or three things that we might think caused this particular event to happen. Maybe it's a marriage, maybe it's a divorce, maybe it's a robbery, maybe whatever, but it's out of the norm. And rather than allow what happened tell us a lot about what went on. People don't do this unless they're under the influence of something to do it. What, based on those previous programs, what do we know influences people? We know that words or language influence people, probably more than we thought. And probably we don't think that there's a hidden force behind the language that's being spoken for the given time that is being spoken in. You know, the language that led to us in our mind was that you had a lot of people from the church decide that they wanted to join some arenas that they weren't joined before, and they were told stay with the church music, the spirituals, the Mahalia Jackson type of audience, the Aretha Franklin type of audience at first. Don't go out there singing that old devil music. I want to forget, because I'm going to mention him a little bit later. I mean, a little bit frequently, because it is a good example. Sam Cooke. I remember him when he was with, I forget the name of the group he was with, but I think it was Four Men. And then one of the things that they impressed people with, they used to sing a cappella. They didn't need any music. They just sang straight up, just whatever. And I remember in one of the churches that I went to back in the day, there was a group of men that did the same thing. They all came out of the barbershop. They came from the barbershop. They met each other there. I'm not sure whether a couple of them were barbers or whatever. But at night, I would go over to and listen to their practices and what they prided themselves in being able to do, what they would sing a cappella without any need for guitar, piano, any instrument. And Tulla was very popular, which it was in the era that I'm talking about. These people were had the audience in awe because their music sounded just as good as the people with instruments. They would harmonize and they would oh, I forget what the name of that thing that the Ella Fitzgerald and all of them, they could take it and make sounds that were just like the instruments. I forget what they called it. But all that was an era. And it had a strong, what we're going to talk about, spirit that these people were involved in. They really weren't about making money as much as they were about making a contribution with the expression of their choice. I'm going to say that again because this is something to think about. They were really concerned about making a contribution with an expression of their choice. They knew they had talent, but they didn't recognize how much talent that they had because compensation was coming into the picture. And I remember when Whitney Houston came out in the movie The Bodyguard, how her co-star, I forget who it was, but he said Whitney Houston was very attractive, but she had low self-esteem. And he said when she went to do the audition, he said you could hardly see her face because of all the makeup she had on. Because what she saw when she looked in the mirror wasn't what we saw when she came out on the stage and did whatever. She looked like she was a very confident, see, 314, confident person. But in reality, the inner person was under the influence of what she had heard growing up, what she had believed about herself as a woman, what she had seen as real beauty versus the beauty that we saw, just plain young girl with a talent, come from the church, making a contribution in the arena that we weren't able to make it in because we were singing songs that they wanted to hear, but we were singing them with that good old-time feeling that they wanted to hear too. That's why when Whitney Houston sang the God Bless America at the sports thing, they gave that rendition one of the most popular ones because she didn't just sing it. She did her version. She did her rendition of that same song, and instead of just making it where you bow your head and put your hand over your heart and, you know, just kind of be in a moment of silence. No, it kind of got a little flavor to it, a little rhythm to it, and they realized it gave the spirit of patriotism just as good or better than the solemn, dry kind of, you know, do-do-do, and you salute or you take 2 minutes to pause. It had you thinking about God blessing America and God had blessed America and it's good to be an American, as good as better than the old dry rendition. And you might ask yourself, and it's good for you to ask yourself, what has this got to do with the religion? Everything to do with religion. And before we get through tonight, we're not going to take a lot of time tonight, we really, because I don't want to sound preachy. It's right there before our eyes, and we didn't see it. And then some of us did see it. But we were still under the influence, so we couldn't present it with the power that it really had. So last little thing before I get to 314. Thus, the reason that after a while it lost favor and we began to sing the funk, the funky stuff. Can't get enough of this funky stuff. And the whole thing changed over. And the one record I remember Imam Muhammad commenting on was One Nation Under a Groove. He said it wasn't an accident. It had deep signals to the people who were putting us under this groove and saying mission set on its maiden voyage will accomplish the desired ends and we'll have one nation under a groove. Because right after that or right before that or right along with that, who let the dogs out? President Reagan used it at his song at his inaugural. You say natural, I say unnatural, very unusual, but he found some kind of symbolism or some kind of connection to the point to where he embraced that to be a popular song or theme at his inaugural. So this is what we want to think about. How did we get there? How did we lead there? And where are we at now in relationship to being there? Are we still under the influence, maybe, and don't know it? Or have we seen the light and recognized that some of this stuff, most of this stuff, didn't come from us? It came, we were the conduit that was used to present it to the country, to the world, and have that influence over the people. Wasn't our desire, it was the desire of those who chose to use us as an instrument to do it. That's my theme, that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. So we're going to go to 314. And get some input, early input here. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Imam Nazim Pasha, Mark Shaheed here from the STL, Gateway City of St. Louis, Show Me State of Missouri. Alhamdulillah, praise and thanks belongs to Allah. A very excellent topic you've chosen. I just wanted to chime in real quickly because I want to hear all what it is that you have to say on the topic. But just to give a little information, Sam Cooke was actually born where my biological dad was born, which is Clarksville, Mississippi, 1931, as a matter of fact. And he started out with a group called the Soul, listen, Soul Stirrers. You talking about spirit, you know, spirit comes from a soul. But the name of the group was the Soul Stirrers, and he became the lead singer for that group. And I don't know about Whitney Houston. Whitney Houston, in my opinion, when it came to the national anthem, in my opinion, she sung the second best Star Spangled Banner. As far as I'm concerned, number one was Marvin Gaye, and he did it with the Marine Corps, and it was soul stirring too. But Whitney Houston did an outstanding job with the national anthem.
Yes.
But God bless. Yeah, I think that's what you were meaning when you said God bless America.
Absolutely.
But God bless America. In my personal opinion, number one, and nobody I've heard have ever sung it better than the legendary Ray Charles in terms of God Bless America. I just wanted to say that. And then for the other thing you was trying to remember in terms of the legendary singer Ella Fitzgerald, Louis Armstrong, that's called Scanting.
Yes, that's what
I knew you was trying to remember. I just wanted to bring it up, Scanting. And we had... in part of our culture, some outstanding scanters of all. And, you know, even the late, great, what's his name? I can see his face. He could actually emulate actually instrument sounds.
Was he a jazz player or was he R&B?
He didn't per se play. He was a vocalist, and within recent years he passed away.
Was he back in the era of Cab Calloway and them, or did he come after that?
No. He was after Calloway. He was after Calloway. He wasn't in that. He wasn't in that era. And as a matter of fact, if it comes to my mind, I'll just call back in a little bit later on. But he was very very good at impersonating actually instruments. But Scanting was I've never heard anybody do it better than Miss Ella Fitzgerald. She was.
Yeah,
she
you know that commercial she used to make on TV.
The Broke Glass.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, and actually, the high pitch in terms of voice, it can actually, you know, of course, depending on the thickness of the glass, could actually could do it, you know. And from what all reports were, that was real. There was nothing fake about it. She could get those type of notes, you know. And hit those type of notes. So yes, and you know the you speak about spirit in terms of influence, and as a wordologist, I want to give this acronym. Hopefully, people will be able to see it because you've already touched on it. You know, it never fails, lurking under each new circumstance emerging. It never fails. Lurking under each new circumstance emerging, there's always influence. So when you see any new circumstance emerging, it's there. It never fails. And because when you see something that you haven't seen before that's coming into existence in terms of human society, meaning that it has been influenced. There's been a change in the spirit and the influence, you understand, helped to bring it about. When you might not see it, but it's been influenced. It's like even with the behavior that we see in terms of young people today, you know, so we can ask ourselves, whoa, wait a minute. We kind of go back. We may look at the era in which we came up in, but was the same spirit prevailing at that time? Well, the same influence, it never fails, lurking under each new circumstance emerging. I'll stop there. As always, I'm enjoying Al-Islam-based conversation. And that other recording artist, you know, boy, it's right on the tip of my mind. It's like in the subconscious trying to come to the conscious, mm-hmm. but it just... Yeah. Won't come through. I know you've had those moments too.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to give that scanting is what we have been known for in the jazz world, and when you mentioned the legendary Sam Cooke, where I still have a lot of family. Matter of fact, maybe going there. I just heard that a cousin of mine had 4-stage cancer, colon cancer, and they all still reside right there in Clarksdale, Mississippi. But the soul mm-hmm. stirs in which Sam Cooke, he became the lead singer, you know, and he started there as Aretha Franklin started in the church. Many of them started mm-hmm. in the church. Al Green started in the church.
Yep.
They started in the church, and then they came out. And like you say, you know, they said, why would you do that? You know, it's the devil's music or what, but Al Green went back into the church, but he couldn't make the money that he was making when he came out as a recording artist, so he went back into secular where they could make money and earn money and everything. It wasn't much money to be made.
Do you remember who one of his biggest supporters was and actually was behind a lot of his music?
No. Who?
Willie Mitchell.
How about that? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
He's talking about coming out of retirement.
When you do the history on many of the outstanding recording artists, including Gladys Knight, I don't know, Martha Reeves, there's so many of them. They got their start right there in the church environment in terms of singing in the choir, later becoming a soloist and everything, and then eventually, you know, they got their national acclaim, actually, you know, doing blues and rhythm music and everything, which is how most of them made their living, you know, in that regard.
Let me ask you this question, and maybe you may not can answer, but you can think about it and help me answer it. I remember there was a woman, you talk about Gladys Knight, and she was very close to her mother. And she mm-hmm. said she had a song that she wanted to sing, but she needed to get her mother's approval first. And it had, I forget the name of the song, but what it had to do with what happened last night. And it's having to do when she lost her virginity. And, and she tells her mother to her,
first,
I know you're not going to sing that song.
The very first time.
Yes.
Oh, man. Now, that's on the tip of my mind, too. Let me think about that.
Yeah, the very first time.
Let me think about it.
She wasn't. She wasn't a long time run like a Diana Ross.
She had a couple hits. I almost want to call her a one hit wonder, but
she did make a few other recordings.
But she got national acclaim for that one. Absolutely. Let me think on it.
One of the reasons I'm laying it out because I'm gonna draw in that. We had talent, and we had songs that would touch the spirit, but what the people who were behind it, they wanted stuff that would touch the pocketbook. So they weren't impressed that this lady went to her mother and got her mother's approval to sing a song, and then when her mother heard the words, she said, "I know you're not going to sing that." You know,
I know you're not going to sing. I know exactly the song. I can't call the artist. Let me think on it. Maybe it'll come to me.
And all I'm trying to say to you and say to the audience that hopefully will hear this is that when we had that spirit, that was the thing that was really brought us out of this thing that we were going through, slavery and all that. We were on our way out without the bitterness, without the hatred, without the payback time and all that. And when we had that spirit, God blessed us more than any time with the Martin Luther Kings and all the leaders that told us the best way is the nonviolent way.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly because it was actually a music that was coming from the soul. And the needs and the urge of the soul. It was coming purely from the soul.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't being influenced. Like the music today is so influenced by the culture. As Imam Muhammad said, the popular culture that we're in. And it's reflecting that.
And he also mentioned that rapping, all that rhyming and everything, is profane poetry.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that's a great point that you're actually making because you can listen to the lyrics and you can tell that it was coming from the soul at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why it actually had influence and impact upon the people because they were relating because the same urges was coming from their soul, too. And it's like,
this is coming
from the soul and going to the soul.
Right. And, you know, just while you're here, let me make one more observation that you can relate to, and it impressed me probably as much as the song. But when I heard and saw Sam Cooke perform "Change Gonna Come,"
and the man
sitting beside me at the thing broke into tears. Grown man, you know.
Next
thing I know, he wasn't really letting people know. He was trying to hold it in as much as he could, but he couldn't hold it in. He had to let it go, and it just came down. It came down like on his cheek, just running, and he was just crying. I looked over there, and what he had heard was that this is gonna be favorable.
That's right.
I come from this, and when I do this, and when I do that, change gonna come. You gotta be patient.
You know, that's such a popular song that my grandfather. That was his favorite song.
Mm-hmm.
By Sam Cooke, and my grandfather, my grandfather and my grandmother never came into the Nation of Islam, but they were what you call sympathizers at that time. They supported the program, the economic program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And when my grandfather did not believe in Christian preachers, he didn't.
Right.
He just and then there's some things I won't say that he said about them. But when he transitioned, my family didn't want to have a Christian preacher do the eulogy. So they got together, like, And they came up, and they came up with the decision, we should let Mark, that's me, do the eulogy. I've never done anything like that before in my life. But I couldn't resist that because I knew that that would not have been the wish of my grandfather. And in his service, his funeral service, it was not a janazi, he was not a Muslim, I played that song. That was his song. I know that a change is going to come. And it was really, it was soul stirring. And there were there were some tears that came, you know, because that song that you're speaking about, not only probably the man that you saw that you were sitting next to, that song is soul stirring because it stirs in the soul what God has put in the soul, if you will,
right.
In terms of knowing that a change. You know, when you think about our foreparents and what it is that they went through and all of that, see, thank Allah for imagination, because some of those things, you know, you don't want to have to experience those things. Man, I've heard people say, oh, man, I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done that. Well, you know, if our foreparents wouldn't have done that and done that, then would we be here? Ask that question.
Because I was a young man. I was a young man, and what I heard in it was that your suffering is not going to be in vain.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Yeah. I heard it too. You know that, and there's an outstanding gospel song, spiritual, if you will. Let my life not be in vain. I don't know who originally did it, but that's a soul-stirring song, too.
Well, Mahalia Jackson was the top of the chart.
Mahalia Jackson
might
have been the one. You know, you brought her up. You know, Mahalia Jackson, she had a lot of them that came straight from the soul. She had a beautiful voice, but what I'm saying is the lyrics and stuff, I mean, if you was a human being, it was going to touch you.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so while
she
I got
might have been the first
here,
one to have done that, but don't let my life be in vain. It's a outstanding spiritual, I have to say.
Well, you know, Google will tell you once you go in there. If you go to Google, Google will tell you exactly who it was and who sang first and all that and all that. But I don't want to leave you here since you got such a strong connection with Sam Cooke. I did musically. I didn't know a lot of his history, except for Soul Stirrers. I knew that because, like I said, the group that was there in my hometown, they reminded me. In fact, that was their idol there because they had reached national acclaim. But one of the songs that we haven't mentioned, and we would be remiss if we didn't mention it because it had equal power, not as much as Change Gonna Come, but Bring It On Home to Me.
Oh, man. Now you just touched me. I'm saying, I was young, young man. But man, whenever I hear that song, it just does something to me. Bring it on home to me. Yes. That's what we call the oldie but a goldie, a oodie but a
oldie
goodie.
Oldie but a goodie. Yes. See, because it gave you lyrics and it gave you inspiration. Not you, but us. To say and do things that we wouldn't normally do, because it was the music was the muse and it was the catalyst to say, now that's saying something.
man, you brought about back old memories and Bring It On Home to Me. Oh, every time I hear that song, I don't hear it often enough, but it's an outstanding production. You know, I think when we look at those type of songs, how they really touch the soul, the human soul.
Oh, my God.
The human spirit, you know, the relativeness, the connectedness, how it unites with people, how it resonates with people. That's something that's naturally that is there.
Hold that thought right there. Let me interject this real quickly because it's going to be where I want to project to when we get off the phone with each other, and I want the audience to hear more. But what we also experienced and saw, it was equal. How can we say this? It was a movement that gave equality, because the women got as much recognition as the men did, because
absolutely.
Just like you said about Bring It On Home to Me,
mm-hmm.
one of the songs, and she wasn't a big star, but she this was one of the most popular ones, and it stayed popular with me because I was lacking a young lady at the time, and she said the words that I wanted to say before I said them, and that was Yes, I'm Ready by Barbara Mason.
Yes, I'm ready. Okay.
I don't even know how.
Oh, yeah.
To do,
that's
do,
right.
But I'm ready.
But I'm ready. Yeah,
I'm
ready. Oh, yeah. I do remember that. Yes, I'm ready.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, all those things that obviously that, you know, when you relate to life and everything, and, you know, life, it starts as simplistic, but it becomes complex, or, like I like to say, immaturity, and then it gradually gets to maturity.
Yes.
So
right.
In that song, you can see, say, if the acknowledgement is, now I'm ready, then the
yes.
inference is that yesterday or last week or last month, last year, I wasn't ready.
Right. Yes.
But a maturity has come about in
mm-hmm.
the life. And, you know, and you know what? I think... you know, Imam Pasha, we have to ask ourselves in terms of just life itself.
Mm-hmm.
Are we ready? And then we have to also see, you know, as all of us are parents or even grandparents, did I really help my child to become ready?
Yeah.
For whatever life would bring, you know, and we don't always know what life is going to bring, but did we help to prepare them for
right.
that? And, you know, just because we say that we're adults, are we really ready?
Right.
For
well,
what,
I do
know
this too.
Life
once, once that type of rhythm and blues left,
mm-hmm.
and it got funky, because back to that dog issue there, you know, who let mm-hmm. the dogs out? Prior to who let the dogs out was Rufus
yeah.
doing the dog, you know.
Oh man, I never cared for it. I never,
right,
you know
what?
I really
but it,
never.
It was a sign that that it was changing, and it was getting
yeah,
funky
it was
because
changing.
Who Marva Staples and the Staples sisters and her father.
Staples, yeah.
That, yes, they had a couple great hits, but they were highly suggestive, sexual, music.
Oh yeah.
And they came straight
well,
out of the
you
church.
Know the inference. Even in some of your old music was there, but I would classify it as subtle, you know. It
yeah,
was
absolutely.
Subtle, but
it wasn't
there.
Graphic. No.
It wasn't graphic, and it wasn't, as they said, bodacious or very overt as it is today. It's like it's
right.
right in your face.
Absolutely.
Right in your face.
Absolutely.
And they used to,
yeah.
and you remember the jocks on the various radios and everything, they would censor that one woman that you was talking about because she had a tendency to say some things that they would not allow to go over the airwaves. And
what woman is that? What?
I can't think of her name. I blotted out, you know. But she.
Oh, the woman who talked about the first time.
Yeah, but she has. I think she had a couple other productions. It was the same
oh, yeah,
one
yeah,
that's
yeah.
in my
mm-hmm.
mind. She had some that was somewhat kind of vulgar, and or
oh,
at least they
okay.
didn't
yeah, yeah.
think it
right.
was decent enough for the
right.
the list here. And so they would
yes.
just go beep, you know, and then they would just
yeah,
go
exactly.
over the rest
they used
of the
bleep
song,
it out.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they would just beep it out. You know, so you had. Always an inference in some of the lyrics of some of your good music, and then you have what I call the classical music for all times. It can be played in it all times. It doesn't matter. You know, it was sensitive to age and all. You,
right.
you didn't have ratings like you had to have PG to listen to this or,
right,
you know,
right.
This was R-rated, restricted, or whatever. Now, a lot of the music could be X-rated, you know,
right.
as far as that go when it had ratings and all.
Right.
So, actually, it has become a decline in the moral fabric of the human being, as we see the human
right.
being today, in terms of you talk about influence, the influence in culture,
right.
and they have actually, and maybe you'll talk about this, they actually have created the appetite for that. You know, one of the first things we learned in economics. The economics, you learn the supply is based on demand. So
I don't want to leave. I'm going to go back to something.
And I'm going to stop because, I mean, this has been a conversation, an Islam-based conversation.
Right.
But I'm going to bow out.
Absolutely.
I'm going to bow out.
But so we lose sight of how it came about.
Mm-hmm.
We simply took music
mm-hmm.
to be the influence that gives us a certain spirit. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes it lifted our spirit. Sometimes it never killed our spirit, but it gave us I know I had to definitely go to some anger management with some of the words I heard. I remember when I was listening to The Last Poets. They had a question that they asked people, are you involved for a cause or just because?
I remember that.
Whatever you do, what they say, when free your mind because your behind will follow.
Yeah. And
the revolution
will not be televised.
So I'm saying that to say that we were still in the spirit. We were coming toward the gangster rap and all that and everything. But those little things gave us, how can I say, bought some time for us because it hadn't got funky yet. But they were asking some real good questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was still some hope. And that word is having only positive expectations that we would actually arrive. That acronym for hope is having only positive expectations. But you're absolutely right. When you chronicle that in the history in terms of the profound effect that actually music had upon people, and if we're talking specifically in regards to African American people, you're absolutely right. That was the time that what they said and everything is still, it was hope. As Jesse Jackson said, hope was still alive at that point.
Exactly.
But we
can
see the impact and influence that how culture and how in music world can have an adverse effect upon society and a profound adverse effect upon even our children and all too. I'm going to stop there, and I'm going to get off and let you continue on, and something coming to my mind and somehow I'll punch back in, or any one of those artists come to my mind, I'll punch back in. But I'm enjoying Alice Fountain.
Let me do two things before you go.
Okay.
It'll prolong it a little bit, but it's really right in line with what I had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I was under wonderment, and it really influenced my writing and what I had to say and everything. I was wondering in my mind where they got these lyrics. What brought up that kind of scene like Freda Payne singing "Bring the Boys Home"?
Oh yeah. Boy, I used to love Freda Payne.
But I don't want to go there. I just kind of want to mention it. What I really want to go to is that one of the most talented lyricists that didn't do anything but write for other people finally was convinced to come out and do some of his own songs was Luther Vandross.
Yeah, absolutely.
To the point to where he joined the elite club of having a first name recognition, and it went from there. A lot of people didn't even know Luther's last name.
That's true.
Because he was referred to as Luther. Because once he did his little entree, he hadn't sang a word. He did his little introduction to what he was getting ready to get sang. You knew, first of all, it's going to be good. And second of all, you knew who it was.
I remember hearing him when he was just a prelude to the stars here, which was the Four Tops at the fabulous Chase Park Plaza. He was the opening for the Four Tops. And I never forget it. As sure as I'm talking to you now in the radio listening audience, he stole the show with standing ovation after standing ovation.
Yes.
And he was not even well known at that time. He was just coming out. You know, and you can see that he was a star on the rise. You know, so I'm really not. No, you're right on point. I mean, oh boy, this is a good topic because the influence and impact of music and the profound effect, you know, and this has always been in terms of a part of the culture for African American people.
Right.
And this is a good topic because as you chronicle the music and go down through the time, and you can see the impact in terms of even the thinking, the disposition that people had, and the behavior, the actions that it actually produced. So this is a good topic.
And if you really want something to really address your anger, your hurt, your pain, for me, music was therapy. And like I said before, I had people with the lyrics and had said the things that I wanted to hear to get me through what was a rush period in my life. And man, I can put that on, and that's when you know you had the 45, and you put a little 45 on. You stack about four of them deep, and they just keep falling. And now, notice something today. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but they've taken that away where you can personalize. You got to go to Spotify, and all that. They took the CD out of the car. They took the cassette out of the car. They took the 8-track tape out of the car, and now you got Bluetooth telling you, and you can't select your stuff. You select from their catalog.
You lost some freedom, didn't you?
Yeah, you lost the freedom to choose what you want to hear. You still want to hear that good old time music, and you can't hear it unless you go to them, YouTube or somebody, and get it. Otherwise, you won't even know, you know, where it's at anymore, because you don't have it in your on your CDs anymore. I mean, they still
That's
make
right.
them, but not like they used to. CDs was I thought they were the end line. I said, okay, I can see why they left cassettes. I can see why they did 8-track.
Yeah.
But when they dropped CDs, I was like, whoa.
Whoa.
You know? That was a part of my routine
freedom.
To go and see what the latest CD was.
Yes, and me too, bro. But, you know, and they call this here, you know, revolutionary in that regard. But I'm with you on that because we're from the same era, you know, and
Absolutely.
Having that freedom to be able to play that. And as far as you, when you said you're right on point, it was always a form of therapy, you know, music could take you back in the time.
Yes.
And it could actually it resonate with you because of what's the lyrics in terms of what was being said. It was therapy for a lot of people. It was soothing, if you will, for a lot of. It brought a sense of tranquility to their life when it was chaotic. You know, we actually had that in our music, and this is what we said. We call that music for all times. It becomes a classical because even the generation today, I actually have children that actually play some of that music.
Absolutely.
In my life, because it resonated with them. You know.
Yeah.
So.
I said I was going to leave you, but I'm going to let you go with this one right here because this one really just popped into my head, and it was really, if people are looking for a model of how to get through hard times, they can look at our model. They ain't got to look at our music, but they look at our model. And certain music that had the words lifted the spirit, and this is one of them that you're going to bear witness that it did it. Sly and the Family Stone and Everyday People. Everyday
man.
People. The black one, the white one, the Muslim one, the Christian one, huh? Did you know,
you know, man, Pasha, I wondered, did you write a list out there, man? Come on,
I did not. This is straight up memory, flat-footed. That's how deep it was for me.
Everyday people. Oh, man. Yeah, you know, and then, you know, it's you want to say that they were actually ahead of their time, but they were really on time music because when you look at the social dynamic in terms of it was the white against the black, you know, against the white, you know, and it's this and it's that and it's something else and like you say, woo 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 and all of that. But then
Jeffrey
this
Osborne.
Music Yeah, but see, this, yeah, can you woo woo woo? But this music was soothing. This music brought a sense of balance. It brought rationale, reasoning. When you listen to it, oh man, that
you hear it was so soothing. I remember sitting in front of my black and white television and hear two people introduce black people on their show that they broke the ice, they broke the barrier, Ed Sullivan and Dick Clark.
Oh man. Yeah, we got a really big show tonight.
Right.
We're gonna bring on. You know, and a lot of them made their debut, and it was a sign that they actually had made it really big to be on the Ed Sullivan Show, as he said.
Yeah.
You know.
And then Dick Clark, he would come and introduce the Jackson 5 and all of them and Michael and one of them. And the same thing, we haven't talked about them because there's a lot of time, but the same thing for the Temptations.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody
absolutely.
Could be the lead singer on the Temptations.
That's
but
what made
David,
them.
Because he was whatever.
That's what made them the best group out of all the groups. And when you said the greatest group, you really saying something in that era.
Absolutely.
In that era. Everybody could be a lead singer there. So and then not to lose the message here, you know, the influence, the influence, the impact, because it still was music that was relative to the time that we lived in, and when you classify a love song, if it becomes a classic love song, that means that it could be in any era, any time, and it still will resonate with the human soul. I just want to say that
the fact that that we still can continue and keep the theme alive is that because it's so rich. Now I said this with the last, but I'm gonna say these last two people here. And I want to get back to your question because that's the one I think going to take us to where we're going to end this particular talk, because it's very important that we answer this, or not that we answer, but we address it. But I remember talking about groups and talking about songs and talking about eras and talking about how they were affected. The Temptations had many, many great hits. But in my personal opinion, the one that stayed with me and the society was My Girl.
My Girl.
And the other one was to hear the Dells sing the long version of Stay in My Corner.
Oh, man, those are classics, no doubt about it. My Girl, because then it gives a description of what type of and you know, if we're thinking about actually, it was such a classic that the qualities and characteristics, the lyrics that was given in that production, actually, even as a Muslim, those would be the qualities and characteristics that you could look for. And then in conjunction with that, Temptations again, Beauty's Only Skin Deep.
Yep.
You see, now another one that actually, in terms of the social dynamic and climate, was A Ball of Confusion. Think about the lyrics. A Ball of Confusion. You see? So, I mean, today, would that be applicable today? Anytime people now don't recognize the gender in which they was created, but think now we have LGBTQ, you know, in form of that. Wouldn't that seem like a ball of confusion?
Absolutely. And they were the first one to identify and not crucify, but identify and crucify deadbeat dads with Papa Was a Rolling Stone.
Oh, there you go.
Wherever he left his hat, that's where it was home.
Wow. And so is that relative today, you know, when we look at it, you know, but it's just bringing to light that these things actually, you know, were real, they're relative, they're pertinent, and we have to look at it and examine, you know, what has happened and what has transpired and has been put into music form and everything,
right.
Lyrics.
And when we did it that way, it's something that Imam Rahman talked about in his class, finding a way to talk about a subject that's very challenging and sensitive to a lot of people. When you present it that way, it doesn't it's not offensive, because you can really, oh yeah, you know, he did do that and he did do that. Da, 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 da. You are describing my father. In fact, one of the singers in the thing said that that's how I got written, that he was telling one of the writers about his father. And next thing you know, he said he done took my story and put it on a record.
There you go. Yeah, man. Yeah, you know, that it was a Rolling Stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home. And then the things that was said about him in the community, you know, and all. Now, how many people could and would be able to relate to that? I often said to my children.
One of the things that I say it was a winner was that because even though he had the negative things to say, he never said, he ain't my daddy. You know, that's my daddy. Mama loved him and told me about him, and I'm loving him because without him, ain't going to be no me.
Mm-hmm. And then what about the Mighty OJs with a song that I think that always can resonate if we're talking about the sacred institution of family and marriage life, a family reunion?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Think about the lyrics there in terms of actually in that production, they actually define father, mother, son, daughter, grandpa, grandma.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
So
well, you
I'm
know,
gonna bow,
let me,
I'm going to bow and just tune in, listen in as you continue
okay, well,
on.
I'm going to give you the where we're going to go, and then you can come back in and give us your answer.
Okay. Alhamdulillah.
Is it the diet that affects our appetite or the appetite that affects our diet? That's the question.
Oh,
is it the
man.
Diet that affects our appetite, or does the appetite affect our diet?
I'm really prepared to answer that, but go ahead and I'll come back in a little bit later.
Okay.
All right. Then thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate you contributing, because it was a big factor in my memory loss there, but also in us relating to similar influences that have really been a dominant force and got us to where we are now, because on that was pretty rocky road stuff that we went through that period, you know. It wasn't easy.
Yes, and you know what? I think that more so than what people actually realize, that the music of that time that was resonating and relative and connective helped to bring a union and bring some solace, and also, you know, helped to bring some reconciliation to what it is and what we were going through, and even our foreparents before ourselves,
Absolutely.
Too. So, you know, so that's very important. I'll stop there, and I'll hang up and listen in. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. So, I mean, that requires really to take a deep breath, you know, stay tuned, stay focused, you know, just a little blast from the past, a few steps in the backwards. We know that actually the people in this age group, my age group, we have a contribution to make. You know, we know that it's not necessarily resonate with the people of today, but without it, see, you have to have some shoulders to stand on. See, without it, we wouldn't be where we are, because we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go, but without that period, without that, and you can see the hand of God on it, because we're still talking about it in the same reverence that like it was here, but it's not here, but it is here. See, because the people that got affected by it, they're still here, and it's a movement from moment to moment, but the vehicle that is being transported in is our memory. See, and when we go back and recall those events and those songs and those lyrics and those shows that we went to, we see how it lifted our spirit up, and it became actually a good investment to go to the concert for the 2.5 hour entertainment that we got, because when we came out of the concert, we were a different person. Our conversation was about what we saw, we heard, and what was going to cause us to do now that we heard it. Because I'm trying to remember, and I use Brother Mark as a memory, but I remember same situation, not situation, but that everyday people. Oh, I think I got the, I don't know about this, the title, but I know it was part of the words. To hear Teddy Pendergrass saying, "Wake up, everybody." And then he went down the list of people who needed to wake up. Because people who had been excluded needed to have a spirit of inclusion. So when you talk about the results that you're looking for, you don't want to happen to you. You don't want that to happen to somebody else that happened to us, if you got the right spirit. Because I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy what was done to us as a people. And everybody who had it happen would not have survived. You know, there was the story. I don't know how true it was. I don't know how factual it was. But there was a story that said there was an Indian tribe called the Mohicans, and they suffered from the demise because they were the last of the Mohicans. And I forgot, I think I forget the word, when you kill off people like that and there's no more of their tribe or their existence. But genocide, I know, is one of the words. But yes, they were reaching the rim of being able to divide and conquer. And once again, they mentioned it very detailed what their intention was. I don't know how factual it is, but I go to it as a reference because it's a good reference. And it talks about the plan that they had with the Willie Lynch letters. They wanted us to stay in a domestic thought of our frame of mind so that we wouldn't come out of that trance and be wanting reparations or definitely some type of attention to get us through what would have been caused by them. And now we can clearly state that we don't need necessarily reparations. We need people to not interfere with the progress that we're trying to have and the example that we're trying to lead, that if we can do it, you can do it. Look at what's happening in Israel now. The Hamas came out of nowhere to just issue some pain to Israel because they've been in pain and suffering. Now, I think if you're in that much pain, you need to leave. But I'm not over there, so I can't tell them what to do. But when you do what they did, all you're going to do is cause a lot of people to get hurt and killed. Because Israel is going to come now, and they're going to feel justified, and they're going to be soliciting our resources to go with the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Because they weren't living on the best of terms, but they weren't living under the terms that are coming about now. And you got to look at who did the first blow, Hamas. They killed 1,000, and then they kept some hostages, and they walking them, and they caused them to lose their dignity and all that and everything because they're angry. And they think by pulling people down, it's going to lift them up. It doesn't work that way. God does not reward us because two wrongs don't make a right. We had to hear. I heard that when I was trying to get retributive because I had got called a nigger. I wanted to go on the warpath. I wanted to see some blood. I wanted to feel some pain that I had to go through when somebody called me that name that I thought was my friend. And had I not had a grandmother at home to help me and walk me through that and help me get introduced to what the power of a good question can do. Because she didn't pull out any kit or take out any medicine to rub on me. She asked me a question. She asked me to sit down, first of all. She said, "Let me ask you a question then. You heard. But I'm of the mind that two wrongs don't make a right. But before we get to that, let me ask you this question." She said, "Are you a nigga?" I said, "No, ma'am." He said, "Absolutely 100% you're not one, because God don't make no junk." I haven't been the same since. Those words changed my life forever. You talk about an influence, a lifelong influence to keep me from even thinking about reparations. What I needed to do, more importantly, and I got it done to a degree going into the Nation of Islam. I needed to address, why am I a recipient of such negative behavior on the part of people? And the reason they say that they're doing it is because the Bible says it's okay. Cain and Abel story. And I'm only three-fifths of a human. And I got this dark skin and kinky hair and certain kind of lips and all kind of stuff that they were saying is not favorable and justifiable in their mind to do what they did. And still continue. But in the way down the road, time can help to heal all wounds if you got the right medicine to put on it. And nothing heals the wounds better than the spirit. You can recognize it that you when you see it. And you can see clearly that every description, every force that they use overtly and covertly to keep us emasculated was a lie. We were lied to, and they were lied to, and we were lied about. And the fact that those words can come out of my mouth in these times, this should let you know, freedom, justice, and equality has arrived. I didn't think like this. I was happy with what my grandmother told me. She made me feel real good. And I didn't develop the hate that I was getting ready to develop because I was hurt. And hurt people hurt other people. Only for the reason because they're going through so much pain, they want to do what the saying says, misery lacks company. And I have begun to rationalize in my mind, if you're going to call me one, let me show you how one can really act. Because I'm disturbed by what you told me, so I'm finna disturb your peace. I'm finna remind you that you should be afraid to be on the elevator along with me, to let me come in through the front door and not the back door. And to know I've come along with many other people from that stance to where I am now, to where I can help people who are going through hurt and pain because we went through so much ourselves and still survive. It's miraculous. To see that not in a long period of time, but in a short period of time, the leadership of Imam Wafi D. Muhammad produced one of the largest Muslim communities in America. Now, having said that, yes, it was superficial. Yes, it was this. Yes, it was that. There's so much more work to do to get people to really know what the man was saying. And that can best be done by the community that he said it to. So thus, my spirit is to make sure that his words of wisdom get shared with people who are ready to embrace truth and a spirit of human spirit that can do wonders to make the healing process so much easier, so much quicker, so much deeper, to where you can impact future generations to let them know what I heard as a little child, that two wrongs don't make it right. Don't even go there. Don't even think about it. Think about healing and getting spiritual connections to get the spirit back in your flesh so that it can come alive in your head and your heart. That's the solution. If you can do that, the miracle will follow that. You don't have to give credit to me. You don't have to give credit to Imam W.D. Muhammad, Rahim Allah. But you have to be able to rejoice in the moment and hear what Dr. King said, free at last, free at last. On every level, mentally, spiritually, physically. That's the healing process that can take place. How do I know? Because it took place in me and many more like me. And it didn't discriminate. It didn't say, oh, well, you're a woman, or you didn't get enough pain. You didn't. No, it said, if you want it, we got it. And once you get it, you're obligated. What did we say? Each one teach one. Each one reach one. You're supposed to let somebody know. It shouldn't be a secret. Shouldn't keep it from the world. You don't know who. That's why Allah reminds us, I make Muslims. You just be Muslim enough, courageous enough, dutiful enough, believing this enough to take it out there and be an example of what it has done for you. Without being a nuisance, without getting all full of yourself and all holy and all, you know, full, ready to give a kutbah, we don't need kutbahs. We don't need your impressive Arabic. We need you to take whatever you got and apply it to the situation that you're in. And when it happens and you see the miraculous things that it does, you do what Brother Mark said you do. Alhamdulillah. All praise is credit to due to Allah. I'm just a vessel, just a poor, innocent brother that means no harm, has been harmed, but has healed and is no longer hurting, no longer hating, and no longer wanting pain to be given to others because I suffer pain. No more eye for an eye, two for a two stuff. No, none of that talk. The benefit comes to those who are willing to evolve and change and no longer conform to the inabilities that we were told about ourselves, about Adam slipping, and this is how sin entered into the world by one man's will. We need to look at it, but we need to revisit it and revise it so that it doesn't sound like a death sentence, because it's the thing that's going to get us back on the track. So, yes, if you're presently thinking like you're thinking, then you need to look at it and realize that that's an influence that's leading you down the wrong path. It's telling you something that's a lie. And the only thing that will help you address a lie is the truth. But you have to believe that it's true, and you have to apply the medicine before you heal. You can't say, yeah, but. You can't say, yeah, if this, that, and the other. No. It doesn't require blind obedience. But what it does require is for you to be patient enough and to dig deep enough, and then when you do get to that depth, get to that width, get to that level, you recognize that you now have the tools and the skills to do the job. And that job has nothing to do with hatred. People ask why we do or why we did what we did, and the answer is you let happened to you, what happened to me, and see how you fare. You let the, devaluation, emasculation that went on to reduce us down to the level that we were reduced to where you didn't even get the luxury of calling yourself a man. You got called a boy. Grown man, 50, 60 years old, having to hear that he's thought of in that particular way enough to where someone who is less than his age has the right to be able to call him boy. And he must come with a mannerism, head bowed, hat in hand, very formal conversation to show the person that you're talking to that you know that they're superior to you. And you're showing it with your behavior. That type of behavior was not only promoted, but it was insisted upon. You had to act like you were not going to be a threat. Docile, that's what the word I was looking for. Come acting like you are not going to be a threat. You're not going to be some point in time wanting reparations or wanting equality to rule it to the point to where I get something for what I went through so that I can get on my feet and continue the journey. As long as we don't understand this man, and no man who would do what he did is going to help you get back where you were. If that's the case, he wouldn't have did what he did. If he had said, well, I'm doing this, but at some point we're going to get them back to where they were. And we're going to help them. We're going to open doors and we're going to provide funds and we're going to show that we are really repentant. We want redemption from God to forgive us our sins and make it right with him so he can, and we want to show our willingness to make it right with the people that we put in slavery. Don't wait on that, you know, and that means people who have been through what we're talking about. It doesn't mean just us. We don't want to say this was exclusive. Other people have been discriminated. Other people have went through torturous, treacherous situations. But here's the common denominator. There's only one God. And he answers the call of those who call out in his name, call out the Lord of the heavens and the earth, and know that he obligates himself to answer and to do for us what needed to be done if we'll do what we need to do to get qualified. Because he says to us, never will he change people until they change in what was in their heart. So what does that mean? Part of the problem is in us. It needs to be looked at. It needs to be examined. And that's why we ask the question, does the diet affect the appetite, or does the appetite affect the diet? And to put it in perspective, is it what we eat that causes us to have an appetite for it, or is it what we fed that causes us to keep the diet that we have? Okay. And the answer can be both. When you think about it, because a little bit of both is happening on both ends. Once you get off of a diet, you no longer have an appetite for it. As long as you keep your appetite for it, you are going to have it in your diet. Even if it's just a little bit, you know? And the way that they introduce so many things today, they introduce it like you cannot live without this. You're not going to have fun. You're not going to enjoy your life. You're going to miss a lot of things in life if you don't involve yourself in this. Because this is what they say. I'm not making it up. They say it doesn't get any better than this. Now, you don't hear it as much as you used to. No, I'm sorry. This is good as it gets. That's what you hear. And you don't do, coming back to music a little bit, because there were some profound people in the rap and whatever. They said some profound things. But Biggie Smalls said, don't buy the hype. Now, it's cryptic. Don't buy what hype? What do you mean? What do you mean don't buy the hype? If you're hearing something that sounds too good to be true, it's probably not true. If you see people just stupid with joy and happiness and love and gregariously getting along with their fellow neighbor and, you know, just having a wonderful good time and kumbaya and all that. That's the way they present it. That's the way they present commercials today. I've never seen as many interracial couples supposedly looking that joyous in the history of commercials with that. Look at the commercials and see how many times you see an interracial couple. Bliss. I was almost, and I'm still haven't given up on thinking about doing this, start counting the number of times I see an interracial couple on TV looking like they're in heaven because they have each other and they have the children and they have made a home and a house with each other. So what's the end game? To me, it's the same game that started this whole thing. They sent their woman, Miss Ann, as she was referred, to lessen the hatred that we were going to have in our heart. They sent her out to the fields to get a sandwich and pain, you know. And then when it happened, or we got influenced, they demonized the whole relationship and called it jungle fever or some other stuff that they fabricated. You're not there because you love each other. You're not there because you found equality with each other. You're not there because you're going to be able to raise your children, you know, and have the same things or have better than you. So now you see them taking away the demonizing, and now they're glamorizing. I say somebody got the same agenda. They're using it to work in their favor. Now, not the average person. I'm not talking about the average person. This is diabolical, long-term stuff. This is not some guy who ain't got nothing to do and he decided, wouldn't it be a good idea if we... No, I'm not talking about that. No. I'm talking about phases to undo what's been done to get us on the right path that's going to lead to freedom, justice, and equality. See the progress. See the stuff that's going on. Oh, no, we all love each other here in this room. We all get along. Well, look, did you see the ad? Did you see the people getting along happy and you know, just doing whatever? So you don't have to do all that other stuff you just plan on doing. Forget about it. It's a done deal. This is going to be the reconciliation that you're looking for. If we're going to sit back and think that we don't have a lot of hard work, uphill work to do to get some people out of that valley thinking up to the mountaintop, we can forget about it. We can think that we don't have to worry about that hard work that's going to come with this, with the word of God. It didn't stop the hard work that Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam had to do. It's not going to stop for us because somebody put a picture on a TV screen or in a streaming that it's all right. We done got the ties, the social ties together. We done perform the right medication and the social ties are there and we off and running. The social ties don't come until what brings about social ties come. And it doesn't come in some fairy tale story when you see people looking like they're happy when they're not happy. They haven't done anything to get happy about, except got paid for a commercial they made. That's no solution. And it's definitely, it's the same thing I mentioned a while ago, the biggest monster. Slow down. Step back. Get circumspect about it. Go this side and that side. Look up, look down. And see the fabrication that you're experiencing. They out and out are promoting something that's not true and it's not necessarily beneficial. If people come together and recognize one another on a human level, then you got on the right track. But if you have someone promoting love and happiness on a superficial level, layered with lust and all kind of other stuff, people are not comfortable in their own skin, yet still they can get together and come together. They can't. You have to get comfortable in your own skin, and you not have to be driven by a passion that wants you to do or be or say or act a certain way. Purpose is going to be greater than passion any day, especially when it's prefabricated passion. You've seen this image glamorized, and you've seen another one demonized. You know they got the image of the angry black woman, which is totally opposite of what you see with the joy that you see in inviting personality that you see on these commercials of these couples. So I say if we go out and solicit it and it comes together in a way that's natural and productive and actually loving, because you're involved with your fellow human being and you've actually discovered and you're able to identify that the attraction is real and the next order of the day is family. But if it's prefabricated and people are getting paid to look and act and say and do, it's a whole nother thing. So I say wait, stay observant, stay aware. Emphasis on awareness. Elevate our awareness to what's going on in our environment so that we don't get hoodwinked. It's very important that we don't see imaginary stuff that's demonstrated right before our eyes, but you also should look behind the curtain and see that maybe this is puppets, strings being pulled. And people who are innocent of knowing what's going on, they just see what's the problem. What I just said, we just did. It said at the bottom of the thing that these are actors. So is there acting going on, or is this reality? And then how are we getting ahead of the game? The game right now is to heal and get in the position to be a self-sustaining community. I'll say that again. The object right now is to heal and to be a self-sustaining community. So you don't have to get help from other people and have a whole lot of strings attached to where when you get the help, you utilize the help and you benefit from the help. Now people want to know, since I helped you so much, I think you owe me now, because you couldn't have did what you did without me. So now I make the rules for your future progress and how it's going to get laid out. And you've seen that people have come on board looking all, I'm ready to help you and I can relate to this, and you know, they got one thing in there. They want to get on your ship because it's the next best thing going, and they can see the miracle that's getting ready to happen, and they're there to get a part of it. Now, I'm not saying that people can't be allowed to help. Imam Muhammad was talking. They were asking him about help he was getting from some of the countries, and he said, it's not all money. This is holy money. And he distinguished in a way to let us know that now, yeah, they come with their little money, but he's got a lot of strings attached. We don't want that. We want people to come if they want to help and give us the help that the religion says you're supposed to do when people need help. And don't be holding people hostage with, quid pro quo. You know, you scratch my back, I scratch your back. No, this ain't that kind of Latin and all that stuff. A language that ain't used no more. No. This is Islam. You want for your brother and sister what you want for yourself. That's the spirit to give. That's the spirit we were accepting that kind of help. There's not no, yani, stock for the law, brother, yes, brother, yes. You know, yachi. No, it's not that. Because that could very easily be a wolf in sheep's clothing. You come up with all the great greeting and, you know, and how you want to get the tajweed and how you want to teach the Arabic and woo. But you only want us to be the dog and pony show. And I'm saying that to the community, not the African American. I'm saying that to communities who are being exploited. And there are people who are contributing to this sexual harvesting of these people and grooming people at a young age so that they can be sold and actually extend the power and joy that dirty old men can do, because it gives the appearance that you have access to these young, tender, virgin women, and they want to give you the opportunity to be the one who exploits them first. And they don't put fear in your heart to where you act that out for them as if it's true, because they're threatening you and your family members to do it, or they, you know, they trying to offer some type of monetary value to do it. That's the degradation that's fallen, befallen the world today. And we need somebody, heard this in the class, heard it said in different ways, but I'm going to say it the way I heard it, and I'm going to say it the way I think it will resonate. We have to be prepared to select moral leadership better than we've done. Who is trying to step up and provide moral leadership? I say qualified are the people who need it. You know what your needs are. You know the area that they need it in, and you should step up, attain, maintain, and sustain it. Those three things are not to be given to anybody but you and I. And if we'll do that, I believe Allah will bless us to be successful. Because at the end of the day, when we get where we're trying to go on this journey, we can only look back and say all the time we saw both hands of God helping us along as we went up this journey. And the reason, the only reason we succeeded was because of his guidance and his help in areas where we were still in the dark and didn't even know it. And we needed the light of truth to get us out of the dark. And when we got it, we proceeded with confidence instead of caution. So that's the route. You know, that's the ending thing I want to say. I end with this question, get Brother Mark back on and see what he says. The answer is to diet, appetite, diet, or is it not either or, it's and both? So we'll get Brother Mark back on and see what he says, and we'll conclude with tonight's program.
Alhamdulillah. I just wanted to say praise and thanks belongs to Allah. Boy, I was just enjoying your presentation, you know, so very substantive information that can be beneficial to all of us. You know, information, that word, it has so many words, so many concepts in information. Is to give formation to your life, to be in form, to be in the form which we was created in, and then to be able to transform. You know, correct information helps you to transform your life, to move your life forward in a progressive way. And, you know, listening to you, I see and understand that it can help to give formation to your life and put your life in form and provide transformation. I just wanted to say that. Then I also wanted to say, you know, just thinking on that, the artist I was thinking about and doing the scanting and actually was really extraordinary in emulating instruments was the legendary Al Jarreau. I love Al Jarreau's music.
Al
Jarreau was a man. If you ever saw him live in concert, you was in for a real treat. Very, very talented. I know he passed away a few years back, but I had the pleasure twice in my life witnessing a live performance by Al Jarreau. We had so many outstanding entertainers. And the sister that you was talking about, you know, the night she became a woman in terms of the virginity was none other than Betty Wright. Betty Wright. So, you know, she didn't have a whole lot of, I think, recordings that became on the charts and
did
everything.
Did she make the cleanup woman or the cleanup man?
Yeah, Betty Wright. I think she was the one that did the cleanup. The cleanup woman. Yeah, it was a cleanup woman. Because you better get yourself straight, because otherwise, you know. In other words, that if you didn't have the appreciation for the man that you have in that and those lyrics, because the cleanup woman will really clean up. She'd be cleaning up more than just the house, you know. So it was an inference. It was an inference in that. And then there was the one that coming through the back door. It was just the opposite, you know.
Right.
Yeah, coming through the back door. They got brain freeze on that. I can't remember who was the artist, you know, on that. But, you know, as we started off.
Oh, was that the Mr.
Talking
Big Stuff?
About. Pardon me?
Mr. Big Stuff.
Mr. Big Stuff, who you think you are? That was a couple of versions on that, but I'm trying to think who was the one that was the original artist on that. But since that time, maybe next week we'll have it. But since that time, there's been different renditions of that Mr. Big Stuff. Who you think are? I think it was a female.
Yes, it was.
It was a female. Who you think you are? But there's been some different renditions of that time. It's like most of a lot of your music nowadays, oftentimes you hear them in commercials. You'll hear a portion of it in commercials. They'll take some of those old artists and they'll use a portion of it in commercials to sell you something. And that kind of leads into what you were saying in terms of how did you put it in terms of appetite. And
right.
What?
Is it the diet that affects
the diet,
appetite, or the appetite affects the diet?
Well, you know, I want to go to the Quran first and foremost in terms of looking at what Allah says in terms of shaitan. Allah says, and I can't give you the surah, and I can't give you the ayat, you know, and I know oftentimes Imam Muhammad, when he be teaching from the Quran, he didn't do that. I think he did it purposely. And I think his purpose was for those who really was his supporters and really was his students. I think he purposely didn't always give you the surah, which for those who listen and don't know what surah means chapter. And he didn't give you always the ayat. Or ayat means verse, but it's also a sign, and it's an instructing sign. And I think that, you know, real teachers, they leave something for the student to actually do, to have appreciation
right.
for what they get. You can actually give people too much, and
yes.
then they become just dependent upon your thinking, upon
right.
your work, your effort, and not have to put any effort into that. So
right.
if you're really a student, then you with the teacher in terms of, oh, he's saying Quran, Pasha, that's Quran, Shahid, that's Quran. You know, like the students of Imam Muhammad say, you know, would be able to say, that's Quran, what Imam Muhammad has given to us, you know.
Right,
and
right.
not have to
so
point
what was
it
that
out.
Verse and thing that you were talking about?
Well, the verse is that Allah says in the Quran, and then Shaitan will create false desire.
Mm-hmm.
It's one that false desire. So we can look at desire is like appetite. But to go back to the ayat, if Shaitan
mm-hmm.
creates false desire, this means that the human being has a true desire. So
mm-hmm.
so we have to ask up the question. So what is the true desire? What is the desire that is innate or born, innate or part of the original nature? And that
mm-hmm.
desire is to be obedient and pleasing to the Lord and Creator. That's the
right.
original desire. That's the original, and that's the true desire of the human
mm-hmm.
being. Contrary to what we're talking about, man born in sin, you know, that the inclination or the proclivity to want to do wrong, that was not a part of the original nature. So if Shaitan
right.
creates false desire, it stands to reason that the human being has appetites, but they have natural appetites.
Right.
So we can look at appetites like desire, and so we can have unnatural appetites. We, in other words, when you create a desire in somebody, you know, for a dope addict, you know, drug addict, I should say, then it can become an addiction, but it becomes an appetite to take into something that's detrimental to you.
Right.
And then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, once again, in the Quran, when it talks about, you know, wine and gambling, those type
mm-hmm.
of intoxicants and everything, these become the handiwork of the shaitan to keep you from the transformation of your life, where reformation
mm-hmm.
has, I mean, and actually has to happen. But then there's an appetite. But then the question becomes,
right.
now you have to put in front, is that a natural appetite or unnatural appetite? So we already
right,
know
right,
the answer.
Right.
That is an unnatural
right.
appetite. But then
mm-hmm.
this can become like what that person is living for. So when we look
right,
at diet,
right.
you know, if we look at diet, you know, as wordologists, I actually use two acronyms for it. The first one is a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do I, capital I, do I eat that? And when I'm speaking about do I eat that, we have to understand not just on the surface level. Yes, you can look at it physically, but we also, we were talking about flesh beings. You were speaking about that on a physical level, but we have to ask ourselves on a mental level and
mm-hmm.
what we're talking about tonight in terms of spirit or influence on a spiritual level. Do I eat that? So in other words, these components that are, that comprise the human being, we have to ask ourselves in terms of, what do you say, food for thought. Somebody's giving you what they call food for thought. Do I eat that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And is it halal?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, in other words, for those who don't know, halal would be that which would be permissible but also healthy for us to
right.
take in, to keep in. Or do I use the excretory system and see it as waste and get rid of it? when it comes
mm-hmm.
to me. You see, and then also as a spiritual being, because if we take that in terms of information, does it keep the formation that we was
right.
created in and everything? So other than that, if that is not, if it's misinformation, then this brings about deformation in our life,
mm-hmm.
the deformity in our life. And so we know what has to happen. There have to be a reformation or a reform, you know, to
mm-hmm.
our life. So we want to have the type of diet that is displaying incredibly excellent taste. This goes back to the Quran. Once again, I'm using this as a basis of foundation for answering the question in terms of this. Allah said he has created us in the best or in the excellence in terms of mold. In other words, the excellent, there's nothing else in creation that is more excellently created, because the whole of the creation, he has given us something that can engage this natural creation, this universe that he has created, and can
mm-hmm.
actually benefit from it, and has enabled the human being to construct our own world from that. So when we look at, we want to display incredibly excellent taste in what it is that we choose to eat. Do I eat that?
Mm-hmm.
We're
mm-hmm.
displaying incredibly excellent taste in that. And then we want to choose, God says also in the Quran, choose the best thereof. Choose
mm-hmm.
the best thereof. So if we're following the word of revelation, which is the final word of revelation, and we become students of the Quran, studying the Quran, not only studying the Quran, not to appear to be heavy like you were saying earlier, we're not appearing, Pasha and myself, we're not appearing to try to be heavy, but to actually give something in terms of good information to keep the formation of life that was created originally in terms of the nature in which it was created, that would actually help and benefit us in terms of being the best human beings that we could possibly be, and realizing the potential that Allah
right.
has given to all of us. So we have to be God conscious of God's word, which embodies his will and his way for us. And if we're in that type of state, which is the moral life that Allah created us for, then the chances are slim to none. It's not that Shaitan is not going to make an attempt to create a false desire or false
mm-hmm.
appetite, freakish things in us, making abnormality the norm, if you will,
mm-hmm. right.
accepting that. But then we have the ability to be able to have say-so in our life. And as Allah has said, you know, during the month of Ramadan, that this here is a prescription. It has been inscribed on the nature, but it is also a subscription that was to those who believe, that was given to those before us, so
mm-hmm.
that we may learn. And it is tatakakun, which is a derivative of taqwa, so that you may learn self-restraint, self-discipline,
mm-hmm.
self-management, self-control. But you can only do that if, in fact, that you have taqwa in your life, that you actually are God conscious, or you consciously regardful of God's word, will, and way for the human being to conduct their life. And with that, that becomes a protection, an inward guarding consciousness to things that come to you that would be influences of Shaitan, and say, come on, you can do it, blah, 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 and start trying to translate things and everything, and just put a decoration around that and everything, and tempting you. But if you have the right diet and you ask yourself, do I eat that? And we're not talking about just only physical. Well, we know there are many people today, Pasha, today, they're not Muslim, but
right.
they don't eat pork. I mean, I've never seen a
right.
time when seemingly so many people seemingly are more health conscious when it comes to the physical health of our bodies and not
right.
some don't even eat meat, but not to mention pork. There's a whole lot of people, not Muslim today,
absolutely.
That don't eat pork. It got so bad that they had to come up with a commercial. You remember it? The other
yep.
white meat. The
yep.
other white meat, you see. So now, so diet, what is your diet? You ask yourself, do I eat that? You know, you ask yourself and be honest with yourself. And you want to, when it comes to diet, another acronym, display incredibly excellent taste. Display incredibly excellent taste. In other words, you want to have excellent taste in terms of you want to have experiences, you understand, that will help and grow and develop you and to grow your
mm-hmm.
family and grow community. We can take it on that level. But it's only if we question what is being brought to us, what is the popular culture and the society, what is it bringing to us? And at that
right.
point, we have to be able to filter those things that are coming to us that would not be a good diet, but also,
right.
in addition to that, it will create a false desire or a false appetite in
right.
us that would be detrimental to us and would eventually, through time, would actually destroy us. So that's how I'm answering that, you understand,
okay.
because Allah has put, he has put into us appetite.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. And so when we can go through the month of Ramadan for 29 to 30 days, the putting in check our natural appetite, it should be very easy for us to check unnatural things, appetites that could be created in us, but we have to do that by checking
Coming
the
up.
Diet. Do I eat
well,
that?
Thank you, Brother Mark. I appreciate that. Could you close us out with the fact that I'm not the only program on and there's many
okay.
people who can
okay.
come behind
okay.
us that will do excellent job
yes,
as well.
I can do that. I hope I answered that.
You
I
did,
went the
you
long
did.
Route. The long route about that, but alhamdulillah. And we want you to know, radio listeners, that the beat goes on here on IWDM Radio each and every day, 7 days a week. As tomorrow Tuesday, and that is the very distinguished, esteemed Rashid Salam and his honored guest, instructor Abdul Shaheed. And the production they have each and every Tuesday is the science of your health and you, Learning Lab. Yes, you learn about the science of your health and the science of you, who you are as a creation, a human creation. And you want to bring your pens and pad to that particular Learning Lab. It starts each and every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, and 4 p.m. Pacific Coast Time, the Science of Your Health and You Learning Lab with Rashid Salam. Wednesday is the Parenting and Family Reconstruction Learning Lab with our very distinguished, esteemed host, and that would be Dr. Patricia Slaw-Dean out of Miami, Florida. She joins yours truly, Mark Shaheed, on the Parenting, Family, Reconstruction, Learning Lab, where you learn about correct parenting from an Islamic base and how to reconstruct the destructive family life. It begins each and every Wednesday, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern to 6 p.m. Central, and it's 4 p.m. Pacific Coast Time right here on IWDM Radio. Following the Parenting and Family Reconstruction Learning Lab, it is the MGM Roundtable. That stands for the Muslim Global Message Roundtable. It is hosted by yours truly, Mark Shaheed, where I like to bring and present to you very distinguished, esteemed guests from inside our community. That's the community, Imam W.D. Muhammad. But I do have guests sometimes that's outside of the community of Imam W.D. Muhammad. And sometimes I take on topics that are pertinent to us as a community. And that's each and every Wednesday starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's 7 p.m. Central Standard Time and 5 p.m. Pacific Coast Time right here on IWDM Radio. Thursday, the Sister Learning Lab to the Parenting Family Reconstruction Learning Lab, and that would be the Courtship and Marriage Learning Lab. And I want to say to those of you listening in that we'll be celebrating our 8th anniversary. Yes, our 8th anniversary, going all the way back to our sister station, AM 360 Radio. And we have some special guests, and I'm also nationally inviting my good brother and friend, Imam Pasha, Nazim Pasha, to be a part of our panel. Just come on and say something of what in terms of why the sacred institution of marriage is so very important. We've been on it, and we thank Allah for that. We'll be celebrating our 8th anniversary, and it began all the way back in October 13th, going back to the year 2015. And also, we ask you please tune in and join us. And it would start at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, and 4 p.m. Pacific Coast Time right here on IWDM Radio. Friday is Salatu Juma Day. It's Muslim worldwide. Those who are immobilized can't get out and about. You can always come back to IWDM Radio with the very distinguished esteemed Imam Michael, a.k.a. Mikhail Sahir. With a slot to Juma is each and every Friday afternoon starting at 2 p.m. Eastern. That's 1 p.m. Central and 11 a.m. Pacific Coast Time here on IWDM Radio. And now Saturday has been filled. And once again, the very distinguished, esteemed Imam Mikhail Sahir, the Muslim Book Club. Yes, you heard it right, the Muslim Book Club. And it's each and every Saturday afternoon, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern, is high noon Central, 10 a.m. Pacific Coast Time. And the first publication is a dedication to our Honorable First Lady and Mother of our community, that's Sister Clara Evans Muhammad, the Mother of our Nation. That's the name of the publication, Sister Clara Evans Muhammad, the Mother of our Nation. This is a two-volume book, part one and part two, the early days and the latter days of her life. This is a book that once you pick it up, you won't be able to put it down. There's reading in this production, and then after so much reading, there's commentary, questions that can be made and asked and all. We ask that you please tune in to this very new production here on IWDM Radio each and every Saturday. Sunday, the longest running production here on IWDM Radio, once again with the very distinguished esteemed Imam Mikhail Sahir. Words Make People. Sounds familiar? It is. It was said first and foremost that we first heard it from our beloved leading teacher, Imam Wife D. Muhammad, and is also the theme of this year's 2023 Time to Be Grateful. So each and every Sunday, tune in, Words Make People, and it begins at 1 p.m. Eastern, is high noon Central, and it's 10 a.m. Pacific Coast Time here on IWDM Radio. And you just heard it live tonight, the beginning of the week for us here on IWDM Radio, the very distinguished, esteemed Imam Nazim Pasha. He hosts this production called ABC. It's just as easy as 1, 2, 3 because it's Al-Islam-based conversation. Yes, you can have many conversations, but are they Al-Islam-based conversation? A variety of topics that are covered each and every Monday. We ask that you tune in, invite a family member, a friend, a colleague, a neighbor, a community member, to tune in, to listen in, and be a participant in the Al-Islam-based conversation. It happens each and every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's 5 p.m. Central Standard Time and 3 p.m. Pacific Coast Time right here on IWDM Radio. And we also want you to know that IWDM Radio, we do support the Muslim Journal, which has been the lifeblood of this community for so many years. And so We ask that you keep up your subscription, which is really a prescription. And if you have the wherewithal, you're looking to give a gift and charity to someone, maybe in your family or friends or colleague or neighbor, or maybe a pioneer in your community, or maybe a local library where many can read the Muslim Journal. And last but not least, IWDM Radio, we do support this year's 2023 Time to Be Grateful that will be held in Newark, New Jersey, inshallah, this year from December the 7th through the 10th. And this is the new home of the Muslim Journal. So we ask that you go ahead and get registered. Don't hesitate. Don't deliberate. And most certainly, don't procrastinate. Don't get it secondhand. Be there live. And if you see somebody stumbling and bumbling around, that would be me. So please come up and give me the greetings, and be looking forward to seeing you there at this year's 2023 Time to Be Grateful. And with that, I want to always say this salam is for you and yours. May God's peace be with you now and always. Assalamu alaikum. And back to you, Imam Nazim Pasha.
Yes, sir. Alhamdulillah. Thank you, Brother Mark. I appreciate that, as always. We're going to conclude tonight. I think we had a rich night, and I was very much caught up in the events and brought back a lot of memories. And I'm telling you, I'm really thankful for a lot. I've been on this journey, and I've been trying to keep my head above water and keep my focus and keep it in perspective that it's not about me and it's not about you. This is bigger than us. And if we will embrace the bigness, we'll get a lot of things done that we wouldn't have got done when we let Allah help us, guide us, and protect us, and provide us with the resources to get the message across to you that the life that you may be living may not be the life that you could be living if you had a little bit more truth in it. So hopefully that's happened tonight, and we'll continue, and we hope to be able to see you next week as we continue our effort to get the spirit right, you know, and get ourselves focus and moving on down the road and staying on the right path, a path that leads only in one direction. And if we'll get on it, we'll see the results, and we'll see that this miracle can happen for you as well as it happened for us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.